Welcome back into The Mental Game, where this week's guest is singer and rapper Huey Mack.
I just ended up feeling like shame that I wasn't making good songs. Like, I want to make stuff that I'm proud of 10 years from now, 20 years from now when I look back.
And in this episode, Huey opens up about his music career, where his first songs went viral on YouTube when he was a college student at West Virginia. We talk about the ups and downs of the music industry and his mental health journey, and now as he's turning the page to this new chapter of his music, all of that and much, much more coming up in this episode. But first, I want to tell you about Man Therapy. And yes, guys, I'm talking to you because guess what? We have to talk about our mental health. Look, I know when we were kids, we were taught to just rub dirt on it and be tough guys. If you were emotional, you were weak, but that's just not the case. It's okay to cry even when we're not watching sports. So what I want you to do, if you need to take care of your mental health, is go to mantherapy.org and take the 18-point head inspection where you can get really helpful mental health tips, resources, and everything you need to know to check in with yourself. It's super easy. I just took the test myself. It takes about 2 minutes. Once again, that is mantherapy.org. But now it is time for the latest episode of The Mental Game with Huey Mack. Welcome back into The Mental Game. As you can tell, I got a very special guest with me, my man Huey Mack. Huey, appreciate you coming on.
Hi.
That's a very soft opening to the show. Hopefully people heard that. They've heard your music.
I'm a soft person, so I understand.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be delicate in this conversation then. Your career, it's been cool to watch. We got some mutual friends. So
yes, we do.
I've seen you, you know, kind of take the scene in the college rap scene and then move out to LA. And your music has changed a little bit, as everyone does, grows throughout their career, but it's been super fun to watch, and I'm excited to talk about it. First thing I ask everyone is, what does mental health mean to them? And people have a different answer because it's a very individual thing. People take care of it early on, or maybe they don't take care of it until something pops up. But I ask you the same thing. What does mental health mean to you?
Everything. To me, the most important thing is just kind of finding or being at peace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of a loaded question.
Yeah.
It's such a broad spectrum of things. But, I mean, the better you feel, the more that you're taking care of yourself in that sense. It's just the more you're at peace. And I just want to be at peace.
Yeah. No, it is a loaded question. And so I do get a lot of
it's a very broad spectrum of stuff.
Well, I'll do my best of my old reporter job and dive into it then.
Yeah.
But your life, career, you're West Virginia through and through.
Born and raised.
I did a whole semester and a half before failing out of WVU. High Street got the best of me, but
it happens to most people.
I say the best of us, but most
I don't
people.
Know what it's like. I don't know what it's like so much these days. I'm actually like mentoring a, the university asked me to mentor a creative arts department student.
Oh, that's cool.
Who wants to be a musician. And we have been starting for the past couple of weeks, and I just like, I've been zooming with him, and I'm like, oh man, they're so much different than I was. Yeah. Man.
this
kid's like got his shit together. I'm like, this is just way different.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of
obviously spanning a decade, things change a lot.
But. Yeah, you grow up a little bit and things do change. But that's where you got your start, obviously with music, was at mm-hmm. WVU. But take me through your childhood growing up in West Virginia. What was what were you like as a kid? Was music always the dream?
I had a good childhood. My mother was a school teacher. My stepfather, until I was 17, they got divorced around then. He was a radio talk show host.
Oh, nice. For,
at like the local station. And it was good. Like, he definitely got me into music. I got into hip hop. Like, my earliest memory was like, I didn't know my biological dad, and they were like angry raps about mm-hmm. like, you know, I was listening to like Eminem, and it was very like, and you know, a lot of people were talking about that in that genre at the time. And I remember like, that was like where I let out my anger as a kid to that. So I started rapping when I was like probably 12, 13. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 17 and a senior in high school, I saw Wiz Khalifa. He was coming up.
Yeah.
And he tweeted, he might have had like 40,000 Twitter followers, if you want to book time at my studio, you can do it here. And it was called ID Labs. And that was about an hour from where I'm from, in Morgantown. And it was like $50 an hour. So I saved up a bunch of money working at an ice cream shop and umpiring. And I started going there and I put out like my first thing my senior year of high school going into college. And it kind of like kickstarted it a little bit. Yeah.
That's a really cool, like, just opportunity, obviously, to see Wiz Khalifa be like, hey, come, like, see his tweet and then be like, hey, come up to ID Labs. It's,
well, the funniest thing is when I went there for the first time, I had a session with this dude, Big Germ, who you've heard.
Yep.
They started throwing his name throughout it. And Mac Miller was also in there, and we were both seniors in high school, and he hadn't put out anything. I hadn't put out anything. And just kind of seeing what transpired over that was cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that's super crazy to like look back at two, what, 17, 18-year-olds sitting
17,
there.
My first concert ever was my senior year of high school, and it was me and Mac Miller opening for Currency.
Wow.
In front of like 20 people.
That's that's still crazy. Like when you talked about like just being in ID Labs, being with Mac, like and seeing everything that happened between all of your careers. But if I can walk back, and we didn't talk about this beforehand because we to be open with the mental health side of things. You mentioned writing raps about your dad when you were, you know, younger, when you're first getting into it, because you had never met him. Was that?
Last time I saw him, I was in first grade. I got my name changed legally and he showed up to the court date to try to fight it. But yeah, no, I haven't seen him since then.
Is that something that took a toll on you as a kid with your mental health?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, it's all, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess it all shapes or informs who we are. Like, but when I look back on it, you know, trauma and healing are massive parts of society these days. And I definitely think it weighed on me more then, but now I look and I'm like, well, my stepdad was a radio personality who was very well known in my community. His personality was exactly like mine. His love of music drew me to music. So now I'm able to look at it and be like, well, I'm this other dude. So like,
yeah,
who cares that I didn't know this other person? Because, you know, I wouldn't be this dude that I am without my stepdad.
Yeah. And that's, my parents split, I think, when I was 12, and I like have a really good relationship with my dad, but my stepdad, Josh, I give him all the credit in the world, because that's a very tough situation sometimes to step in and like figure out how to act, how to be, how to, you know, maybe like you don't want to be too much in some situations, but like step parents do like become such a big part of your life and your family. It seems like your stepdad was a huge role model for you.
Yeah. And we've faded in and out. We're closer now. Now I think I'm able to have an appreciation of like, I mean, I'm 31 years old. He was probably around the same age when he came into my life, and to step in and be a father to a kid that isn't yours is like, that's the most noble thing you can do.
Right.
And like be a good, loving dude. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's super powerful. I give, you know, your stepdad, my stepdad credit, anyone out there that does that. So you get 17 in the studio at ID Labs in Pittsburgh. You mentioned your first show was you and Mac both being 17 open for Currency, like in front of 20 people. So it's probably,
you got to also think this isn't 20 people like up front. It's like 20 people sporadically spread out
in like some bar in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Yes, it was called Shadow Lounge, I believe.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
What do you remember about the first time performing live? Like, was there a certain
genre? Oh, it was awesome, man.
Yeah.
There's like, you don't even have like a scope of like what it can feel like. You're just like, I'm doing it. And that's like, I don't know. I don't remember walking away being like mad. I remember being like, man, I just performed. I got paid $50, like whatever it was. It was probably something around that.
Yeah, well, and walk me through like that moment of the first time recording,
and performing, and then you get into college at WVU and things start to take off with YouTube and you putting songs out while you're in school, right? I mean, that was a really cool thing to watch.
Yeah. Well, it started, the first video I ever shot when I was a senior in high school going into freshman year, it was like, you know, when you think of, now that we're getting older, my scope of time is so much. It was like within the 3 months of between high school and college, that one like worked and it did well on the internet, and everything I put out after that did better and better. And then, yeah, it got a little crazy doing school and partying and still consistently putting stuff out that was working. And then going into my sophomore year, it just like kind of exploded.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And that's probably why we're sitting here, because we had some friends cross paths and you started to get booked for tours and shows, and your music's blowing up on YouTube. And it, like, what was it like? Was that a hard... It sounds kind of stupid for me asking it, I think, as like a 20-year-old kid or 19-year-old kid, however old you are, you're probably like, damn, this is awesome. But was it hard to like go chase that dream?
Listen, man, there was nothing hard about that time in my life. I was 20 years old. I was making, I'm not going to say I was rich, but like there was no overhead in my life. I was 20 years old making good amount of money to just go get drunk and perform rap songs. Like it was stupid how unserious my life was at that point.
What was that like kind of moment where you realized it's working, like that you were going to be able to have that experience and be able to chase the dream of music?
Well, we booked my first tour. Well, like I had a couple things take off. I put up this mixtape called A Boy Named Hugh. Mm-hmm. And not only did that like take over Dat Piff, I was like, I'm just going to put it on iTunes too. And if people want to buy it, they can buy it. That went number like 3 in the country. And then I put out this Call Me Maybe remix.
I remember that. Yeah.
Just silly. And it aged very poorly. Let's just say that. And that took off and it was like this hurricane effect. And then we booked the first tour and there were like 100 people at every show, and then within 6 months it was like 500 people at every show, and there was like not even a balance of like, oh, this is happening. It was just like, well, we're here now.
Yeah,
like my first sold out concert in New York City was my 21st birthday.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's incredible. It had to be a fucking wild night.
It was. Yeah, it was wild. But like it, now I think about like years, they're so quick.
Yeah.
All that happened in like 1 year where it was just like nonstop. Yeah. I would go do a show. I would fly back. I would go to class. I would go party with my friends. I would fly out. I would go do a show. And it was just like,
boom, boom.
There
boom.
Was no time to think. Like,
yeah.
And even like a lot of the songs we put out back then, I would make them like that week and like just throw them out because I needed to feed the beast or yeah. like whatever it was. And yeah, it was there was no structure to it whatsoever.
Yeah. It was, well, I feel like you were probably learning as you go, right?
Yeah. I would say less emphasis on the learning at that time in my life, just kind of going with it. But you know, yeah.
How did you and Mike link up? Because you guys were in the same, like you guys did a few songs together, and did you guys tour together too?
We did a lot, yeah. So what happened was we both kind of were becoming a thing in that subgenre of frat rap, was what they called it.
Yeah.
They still call it that. And our mutual friend John Kilmer was like, oh, you two would get along really well. I just shot a video for Mike, and Mike sent me this song called Back Again, and I hopped on it. We shot a music video, and we just became like really good friends for a long time.
Yeah, that was, how much do you think that helped, having like guys same age going through the same, I mean, I know he played baseball at Duke and got hurt, but you guys both are chasing this music dream kind of on that same path together. Do you think that friendship helped you a lot throughout those years doing that?
Yeah, and it, I mean, even as an adult, it still does, because he's cultivated a real thing that I've always learned from. And he was like, by the time I met him, I was like 20 and he was graduated from Duke. And like, I'm not going to say either of us were like the most serious people in the world, but like he always had a different sensibility about mm-hmm. him than I did. I was like, oh, this is fun. This is exciting. And yeah. he was like, branding, you know, the Freshleats was the thing back then. Right. And like, I could always kind of just take knowledge from that.
Yeah.
But then also we could be complete idiots together. And it was great.
Yeah. Kilmer's old videos. Those were something else.
They were something, and they were of the time, you know, like having,
you can't even get through the thought.
No. Hindsight is like, just the best gift in the world. Cause I can look back at some of that stuff and be like, that was really fun at the time, but like, I'm never going to act like that.
Yeah. Again. I'm not going to do that again. You got the shows that you used to have. And I think I've been to maybe two of them, through like our friends with the Self Diploma guys. They were
what
parties.
Shows were you at?
Were they
the Fountain Square?
Fountain Square in Cincinnati. Yeah. Yeah. Those were electric.
And like the thing about that time period, like neither of us, like I wasn't the biggest artist in the world, but we did cultivate the sense of like, it was going to be a party. So kids showed up, hammered off their ass, like yep. ready to have a good time. And I never had a hit song back then, but I could sell tickets better than 99% of artists because people were like, I'm going to go have some fun.
Right.
Like I know some of the song, and then like that's really what was the selling point of the whole thing.
Well, it's kind of like the relatability. Like we talk about that with mental health, but even with your music and the experience that they were going to get there. Like I'm not breaking any news here. You might not be Usher.
Yeah.
But
that's the most hilarious comparison you could have just drawn.
Sorry, there. That came to my mind first.
I'm just
but like the party atmosphere and the fun, and like you were an artist. And you still are, that it's like people can reach out and touch you and like talk to you, and you're normal.
Yeah.
Which I think is really powerful when you have a fan base or
people. And like we were very much like when I'd go to a college, they would say where the party bar was, and we'd be like, we're going here tonight. And right. we would like hang out with kids and like really, cause I was,
you're 20.
That's all I wanted to do. Like just party with my friends. And it's like, well, I'm not in West Virginia with my friends. Like, why not 300 kids from this college just come right. party with us? And it was relatable and it worked. And we never took it too seriously. And I think that's why it worked so well.
Well, so walk me through like that chapter of like exploding like at 19, 20 years old, mm-hmm. getting to tour, live out this music dream. And then, like how you're, I don't know if maturation or maturing is the best way to put it, but like,
is maturation the proper,
I don't know,
way to say that?
I talk for a living. I think it is. I don't know. You do mature, you grow up, that party scene. Like I, you know, drink for a long time. I don't drink anymore, but, and your career changes. How did you like kind of take that transition? When did you start making maybe a change in the music and the lifestyle?
I mean, in terms of drinking, I actually have only drank like twice in the last 60 some days. But I think it just comes with time. Like I have always been able to turn it off. And when I'm on, I'm on.
Yeah.
Like when I want to party, like I'll go party. And then when I'm able to, when I'm like, I got to focus, I'll just do that. But it certainly comes with time. And I got to a point where I mean, we talked about it off camera, but like when I decided I was like going to stop touring for a little while until I just got really sick of doing that. And I did this tour and I didn't see it growing anymore. It wasn't like, it was profitable, but I just kind of looked at people older than me that were still doing the same thing mm-hmm. and acting the same way. And I was like, this ain't me. Like, I'm just not going to sit here and watch this, like get old to the point where I'm just like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm just done and I'm going to wait until I find, you keep looking over there. Is everything
right? I'm just checking my camera. Okay. That's all.
I was over, not the partying, but like just, it wasn't the best music that I thought that I could have made. And I thought I was pandering to a crowd, and I was like 28 years old. And I was like, I don't see this lasting mm-hmm. anymore doing this. and I want like a career.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to do this for the rest of my life. So I was just like, I'm just going to take a break and just see what I come up with in those years. And yeah, it's funny trying to figure out a word. This, I used to complain about it. Like, people are coming up to me in a grocery store and they're bringing up fuck me baby or just something really stupid. And it used to like not upset me, but like I would be like, God, man, like I'm just getting brought up by the past. And I, are you familiar with the group Gianni and Kyle?
Yeah, yeah.
My buddy Kyle and me went to this concert at like 3 p.m. outdoors at this spot called The Grove out here. And somebody came up to me at the bar. And we were just standing there, and he recognized me, and he like just starts offering me shots like midday, and I'm like, no, I'm good. And then he's like pulls out a bag of drugs and offers them to me, and I'm like, no, man, I'm like good. And my buddy looks at me, he's like, I get it now. He's like, that's how people see you, and like that's what they do. And I like just did not want that anymore.
Yeah. Well, so did that.
I don't know if that story all came together in the way I wanted it to, but yeah.
It made sense to me. Hopefully yeah, okay, people listening right. It does too.
I feel like I rambled a bit.
No, that's what a podcast is for. So.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you got a little bit of experience in it, I think. Did those moments or did those years, like trying to figure out how to, it seemed like you wanted to not change your identity, but just move on from that younger artist that you were. Did that take a toll on your mental health? Did it bother you when those situations happen?
For sure, because like, I mean, you're always like, I don't know. I just did this song with Brad Paisley called "Dear West Virginia," and it came out, and it was like this super wholesome. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted it to be like this very wholesome thing, and I got booked for a festival, and I got a call from my agent, and he's like, "Hey, they want to take you off the festival." And I'm like, why? And it's like, they're getting complaints that you got booked. And they're like, and I get it because like somebody hears this whole more wholesome adult side of me and then they click shuffle and it's some vulgar thing I did 10 years ago. And like, I had to be like, I don't know what to do. Like if people are going to complain, they're going to complain. I got to live with it. But in between now and then, was much more like, are people going to look past it? And now I'm much more like, I don't really care. Like, I'm just going to do my thing and, you know,
right.
Let the chips fall where they may, I guess.
Did you ever think about quitting music because like people weren't going to let go of that or no?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I still get opportunity. Like, obviously I just did a record with Brad Paisley and like,
yeah.
Artists aren't nearly as pretentious as like, And in reality, things like that, like their tweets or they're not real or like three older people at this 4th of July festival complained.
Yeah.
It's not like the majority of people are doing right. that. But like for a long time in between it, since like this, I wouldn't even call it a rebrand. I would just say like I grew the fuck up.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I thought, I was like, should I change my name and go by my real name, which is Joey Michael? And then I was just like, what does it matter? It doesn't matter. Like,
yeah,
half that stuff isn't real. Like,
yeah, if people are going to like your music or like you as being an artist, yeah. they're going to follow you throughout whatever you do because they appreciate you, your sound, and what you stand for. And like,
exactly. And like, it wasn't like I was Eminem, like, I was saying vulgar stuff, but it was like all like about partying or like
right.
I was doing my best like Wiz Khalifa impersonation.
Yeah,
it just like it comes off hysterically different when it's like a chubby white kid saying the same things, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just like, whatever, man. I just like to make music, and as long as I can do that, that's gonna come regardless, you know.
Well, you mentioned like moving into the, I guess, your era of music now, and how has it changed? What do you want people to hear when they hear a Huey Mack song now?
I mean, that isn't up to me. So, you know, if I'm making art, then it's somebody else's interpretation of it regardless. True. And if I put any thought into that, I'm not going to make something real. And for me, I think I just, like, I kind of was touching on how unhappy I was like when somebody brings up something I did in 5 minutes making a parody of a Carly Rae Jepsen song at 30 in a grocery store. It's weird.
Yeah.
And it, you're like, ah, that's not. So I just ended up feeling like shame that I wasn't making good songs. Like I went back and I listened to a bunch of things and I was like, I'm not like, the bones are there for a good songwriter, but I'm just kind of like half-assing it and like pandering to a crowd still. Like I'm still trying to please these people who are like, make party songs or whatever. And then the pandemic hit and that's when I figured it out. Like I started learning guitar and I just was like, I really want to become a good songwriter. Mm-hmm. So I started writing everything acoustically. I started like studying, like I got really into folk and like, I'm not the biggest like Nashville country listener. Like I like some things I listen to, but like that, it's not my thing. But I got really into like folk and Americana and like this new songwriting that I'd just never been like privy to. Mm-hmm. And I studied it and I was like, I just want to be a really good songwriter at the end of the day. Like I want to make stuff that I'm proud of 10 years from now, 20 years from now, when I look back. And that's been like my basis.
It feels like you got like almost a new spark, like when that happening, maybe new motivation because you figured out a way to kind of turn the page maybe.
Yeah. And like the album I put out before this last one, I started experimenting like with singing a little more than I ever had. And it was like moving in the right direction of what I wanted to do, but it wasn't there.
Yeah.
And then when I picked up guitar, the first song I wrote was this one called Dear West Virginia. And I just got this really random idea because Brad Paisley's also from there. I was like, I'm going to ask Brad Paisley to be on this. And he said yes. And I was like, well, this is like new.
Yeah.
I've never like had a look like that before. So maybe something in this is right. And I just kind of studied that type of music and I saw where I could fit in it. And yeah, it's been the most exciting time in my creative life as an adult for sure.
Well, so Brad Paisley, I think is still my favorite country artist.
Really?
Yeah. I in high school in Cincinnati, you could buy like the country pack for the summer.
Yeah.
So you would go to all the Riverbend show. That's like the outdoor concert venue there. And I think I've probably been to 4 or 5 of his shows between high school and college just loved his music. For you being a West Virginia kid and being from West Virginia too, that had to be a dream come true when he just says, yeah, I'll be on the song.
It was like, I think my honest
I'm looking for the genuine thing.
No, like I was like, when I was growing up, like I wasn't into country, but I always knew Brad Paisley was the only other guy at the time from West Virginia, so like that was always a massive inspiration for me. And when I got the idea to send it to him, I didn't think he was going to say yes, because like I said with the festival, like I knew you could hit shuffle and hear something else. And I sent it to him and they sent him a note back and they were like, is it going to end up sounding like, and they pointed out some of the not so tasteful stuff that I had made when I was like a kid. And I was like, nah. And he's like, all right, cool, I'll do it. And I was like, more like, oh shit, he said yes. I was like, I don't know if I knew in my head he would do it or not, but he did. And I was just like, right on, cool. And after that, I was just like, this doesn't fit anything else I'm doing, so I'm just going to like maybe make stuff around this.
Right.
And that song didn't even end up being one of the bigger, it's like the fourth biggest song on the project, but it changed my life.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Well, how does it change your life?
Because I wouldn't have gone down there. I wouldn't have had the confidence to just be like, fuck it, I'm gonna start singing, like I'm gonna try something new. And I designed it, I don't know if you even listened to the album, but I designed it to be an in-between. Like there was a little bit of the rap stuff still there, but it wasn't a complete like divergence. And the next one is gonna be like way different.
Okay.
In terms of like, in my opinion, quality songwriting is like really gone up, but I would have never taken that leap. I don't think I would have just maybe stuck to my old bag, tried to get a little better at it, but that,
just it's perspective. It changes things.
Yeah, exactly.
And you've heard Hugh and me talking about our mental health on this episode. And guys, that's just an example of how it's okay to show our emotions and be vulnerable now. A lot has changed since, you know, Huey and I were in college about 10 years ago. And since you were in high school, college, and your whole life has completely changed when it comes to mental health here with Breaking the Stigma. So men, we have to open up about how we're feeling. And that's why I want to tell you about Man Therapy. Look, if you're like me, you've been watching March Madness and crying a little bit or getting a little bit upset, maybe not quite shedding tears when you're losing some bets or your favorite team's getting knocked out of the first or second round. But look, we can cry and let those emotions out about a lot more things in our life than just sports. Things have changed. We don't have to just rub dirt on it, and it's not weak if we're emotional. Being vulnerable is actually a strength, and we're showing that with Man Therapy. And you can check it out for yourself by taking an 18-point head inspection to really get a deep dive on your mental health, but just from a really simple level. It's a test you take in just about 2 minutes right here on your phone at mantherapy.org. Again, that is mantherapy.org, where we are breaking the stigma and showing it's okay to cry over more than just sports.
And so now you're gonna like segue this into what you're working on now, because now I'm interested in kind of how that's going, because your sound has, I know what you're saying about that album. We were actually just playing it in here, cause I was showing my videographer, Chris, just some of your stuff. And you do get more, you can hear the songwriting, hear the singing more incorporated than some of your previous stuff where it was just so rap heavy.
Yeah.
What do you want to shift it to now? Is it just showing off that songwriting talent?
So when I made that, I didn't know how to even sing. I was just singing.
Yeah.
Like I was just walking up to a mic and I was just singing in it. And like, obviously like I understand notes and tones and stuff like that, but like, I didn't know technique. I was just like, oh, fuck it. I'm going to do a duet with one of the better singers of our lifetime with no knowledge of how to actually sing. And I just made that whole album like that in my apartment with friends. Like I was just kind of walking up to a mic and singing, and it was working. And then I started doing shows after it came out, and I had a live band for the first time, and I would see videos and I was like, I'm not that good of a live singer off the first couple of times me doing it. And I was like, I'm going to get singing lessons. So for the last year, since it came out, I've been in singing lessons.
Oh wow!
And I've been hitting, you know, guitar heavy every day, because I just want to be up there in 20 years with my boys jamming live music.
Yeah.
And that's I want to put on like a really good show, and I want to be able to do that show for the rest of my life. And like, one of the issues that I had with the past was like, I just pulled up with a DJ. We took out the verses, left the chorus in and sang over the beats, and it worked. But like, I want to be able to jam out for 2 hours with my boys every night and sing the fuck out of those songs. You know what I mean?
Well, I see the smile in your face when you're talking about this, because it's something that's like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but maybe you didn't think it was possible 3-4 years ago with the way your career or your music was at that point. And now you're seeing, like, from the Brad Paisley song, from the last album, from what you're making now, the singing lessons, learning guitar, like, shit's about to change, and it's possible to live out that dream for 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah, that's exactly. I, like I said, when I stopped touring, I just, one day I called my agent, and it's the funniest fucking story in hindsight, but I'm just sitting in a barbershop, and like, I already saw it, and I don't want to talk badly on anybody else doing whatever makes them happy, but I just saw dudes in my sphere older than me just doing the same thing, and it wasn't getting bigger like mine wasn't getting bigger anymore, and they were just content with just doing the same thing, and I like started to feel a little bad, and then I was like, wait, I'm in the same position. Like I just did not want to overstay my welcome in that.
Yeah.
So I read this fucking Matthew McConaughey thing in a barbershop where he's talking about how he didn't want to be the rom-com guy anymore. And he's like, I took years off. And on a whim, I called my agent and I was like, hey, I'm going to take a break from touring and I'm going to figure out what I'm doing next and like rejuvenate this. And in hindsight, like I no longer saw a place in that world for me. And I lost out on a good amount of money by not taking those offers. But like, I just couldn't sit there and watch it not work and just like cash checks. Like, that's not why I got into music in the first place. I wanted to get better. And
It is cool when you're able to like take moments of your career, look at them and say, hey, like, even though you just mentioned, you did lose out on some money from touring and shows. But you need that time of reflection and figuring out what's best for you and what you want to do next. Walk me through what the process is for you like now with making music. It's an everyday thing with singing lessons, guitar, and you're working on a new album?
Yeah. Honestly, it's just like I take the steps every day to be better. I do the singing exercises, which, like, if you're don't think you're a good singer, take singing lessons, because like, dude, that shit changed my life. Even like just teaching you what ranges you're good in, like I'm just going to use the example, the Dear West Virginia with Brad Paisley is in a terrible range for me, but I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
And by the time I like did, I already had the Brad Paisley vocals. I was like, I'm not going to go back and ask him to re-sing the shit.
Right.
And it sounds great as is, but like I know where to sing it. I know how to sing it. And it's just like, it changed my life. And like, I'm not Adele, but like everybody can do it.
Yeah.
If they just like find their place in it. And it's, yeah.
Well, it seems like you're in a very good place mentally and with the music. Like I figured out through my own shit is that when you are able to like learn how to have all those tools in your toolbox and like what works best for you, how you can best help yourself to feel good in every avenue of life, I think it makes a difference. Would you say you're in the best, you know, mental place you've been in ever? That's a loaded question too, but like, it just seems like you're doing really well. If I can say it just like,
I mean,
that.
It's day by day with anybody. Like I don't like being, complacent. I like being active. I think I'm happiest when I'm out touring and putting out music. And right now I'm in this phase where I'm finishing up music and it's like, yeah, I'm working on stuff, but like 90% of my day is like chilling.
Yeah.
Aside from that. But yeah, I think I'm in a good place mentally. I think the music is doing better than it has in 5-6 years. Yeah, I just think I'm in a place of doing work that I respect.
Yeah.
And that matters the most to me. Like, that's what makes me the absolute happiest in life.
Yeah, it feels like you have this sense of self-worth and respect for what you're doing, which is super powerful. Last thing I'll ask you, unless you got something to add, advice to a kid at Morgantown High that's wanting to get in to songwriting or be a rapper or just anyone that's like wants to get into music, what would you tell your, I don't know, 15-16 year old self?
Just keep writing, because you're gonna write a lot of horse shit and then one day you're just gonna you want to quit every time you write a bad song, but then you have that one that might not even ever come out, but it re-excites you and it reignites that fire, and then like you just got to keep writing every single day. And then one day you're just going to, you know, it clicks.
Yeah. All right. Well, anything else I missed?
No. That's all the questions. I feel like this was short.
I know. I mean, do you want me to just start making up
shit? Was Terry Crews longer than me?
Well, the episode hasn't been out yet, so I guess we'll be doing yours afterwards, so we're not breaking any news. I think Terry was a little bit longer, but I was afraid he was going to punch me if I stopped talking. We got to get you back to Cincinnati at some point and do a show there with our boys. That'd be fun.
Yeah. We can talk.
Oh, we're still going. Yeah, we're good.
The Fountain Square shows were nuts, weren't they?
Dude, it was insane. Like, shout out, you know, Sean Heron and Eddie and all those guys that like helped set that up. But it was, we had you, Machine Gun Kelly, Mike. So many people came through like right when they were blown up. I mean, we probably had one of the years you and Mike came, there was probably 4,000 to 5,000 people at that Fountain Square show.
Like, I remember it being like thousands of people.
Yeah, it was awesome. And it was a free show for people that aren't from Cincinnati. Whatever your city you're in, middle of the city, stage, thousands of people for free, bringing in up-and-coming artists or people that are just getting big at that time. It was electric. Like, I think at that time I was like handing out the codes to the bar nights and club nights for DJ E-Train, Eddie, and then Clockwork.
Have you ever been told the story of when Sean... So I had my first sold out show was on my 21st birthday in New York City. Sean decided to throw me a party at Play the night before.
Oh, and shit.
I puked all over the couch.
Oh no, I did not hear that.
Yeah, you got to ask Sean about that.
All right, I will for sure. That's a good, fun, exciting way to end this.
It was a long time. I've only drank twice in 2 months, so.
Yeah, and I've been sober for 8, so we're you know, be responsible. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Party responsible. Huey, appreciate it, brother.
Yeah, of course, man.
Thanks so much. We'll see everybody right back here next week on The Mental Game. And that was an awesome conversation with Huey. I can't thank him enough for really opening up with me about his music career and mental health journey. He's got a lot of new music on the way, including a new song that came out in early March called Pocket Dial. It's a really good song. I think it's a jam. Go give it a listen wherever you listen to your music. But once again, a big thanks to Huey Mack for coming on The Mental Game. Next week, another surprise guest, and we are going back to Los Angeles, staying kind of in the music world, but going to dance. That's your one hint. We'll see you right back here next week on The Mental Game.